Coming today on Negotiate Your Best Life with Rebecca Zung.
But I got to the point where I expected my dad to be my dad. And that's what helped me. Now I expect him to walk out, or I expect him to not show up. So once I start expecting what is, which is his behavior, that's when I was able to, you know, I came to an acceptance and I was free from that.
So the big questions are these. How can we navigate and negotiate every situation in our lives, in our career, in our businesses, in our relationships, and even with ourselves for our own self-worth? In other words, what if you could win every time and have no losers? Let's face it, we're not negotiating just to buy a car or for a pay raise. We are negotiating for living in every aspect of our lives. How can we do that powerfully, successfully, and victoriously? Those are the questions, and this podcast will give you the answers. My name is Rebecca Zung, and welcome to the time where you negotiate your best life. Welcome to another episode of Negotiate Your Best Life. I'm Rebecca Zung, and today we have a special treat. If you are ever wondering how to climb out of a black hole, how to achieve a pivot, this is the guy to show you the way. This is the guy that knows how to do it. Pierce J. Brooks knows firsthand a lot about dealing with great loss and great recovery. He is an empowerment speaker now. He's dealt with all kinds of trauma. He was a former college athlete. He was pressured to excel in basketball. He lost scholarships. He had to endure his father's tragic suicide. He hit rock bottom before the age of 20. And he shared his story in a TEDx speech called Playing the Game of Social Pressure. He now speaks all over the world, and he is has launched his brand, the company called Empowered Storytellers. Really, really fantastic, taking people's stories and helping people turn them around. So he's perfect for us and for what we are dealing with as far as dealing with toxic personalities and figuring out how to escape them. So thank you so much, Pierce, for joining me today.
Rebecca, it's so great to be with you in this. I know we're both in California suffering through this heat. I have my towel. So if you see me, you know, dabbing myself a little bit, is because I got the air off.
Oh, yeah. So, all right. So you achieved, we talked, you know, as I mentioned in your intro, that you achieved early success in basketball. So tell us about that.
Yeah. So I grew up as the tallest kid from about kindergarten through middle school. And when you're the tallest kid, particularly the tallest black kid, everybody says you're supposed to be in the NBA. And so they put this identity on me. And at 12 years old, I picked up the ball and started listening to, you know, what people said I was supposed to do. Started playing, and I got it pretty quickly. And because I was tall, I had this advantage of being taller and stronger than everybody. So I played well. And so what happened on the court seemed to confirm what everybody else was saying. It's like, you know what? I am good at this. Maybe I am supposed to do this. And that lasted a couple years. And then I hit, you know, one of the rock bottoms that you mentioned, sophomore year in high school, following a time where I was heavily notarized really around the country, starting to get recruited. I was a freshman on varsity, which was a big deal at that time for a championship team. So a lot of newspapers writing about me, some TV coverage, a lot of hype. And then it came a time where this team, I inherited the team, and it was like my team. And with all this expectations, I didn't match up to what everybody thought. And I started to become discouraged, really got down on myself, started to hate basketball. But I knew I needed to continue to do it in order to get a scholarship, to get my education, right? So I stuck with it, but sticking with it, there was a lot of pain, a lot of hurt, again, letting people down, feel, you know, just living this life where you feel like every time you're doing something, you're not matching up to what people think of you. And you could see the expectations drop and the judgments. It was just really a rough time for me. And that lasted for over a decade.
Over a decade. Oh my goodness. I can actually relate to that because my dad is Chinese. He's a doctor. My mom is German. And, you know, so in my household, it was doctor or lawyer was what you were supposed to do. And ultimately, I ended up becoming a lawyer. But I had gotten married at 19 the first time and had three kids by the time I was 23. So, and had dropped out of college and all of that. Ended up obviously going back to school, but I understand like that feeling of being the disappointment to everybody, you know, every time I would see my parents would like, oh, there she is, three kids, college dropout, you know, and yeah, it ultimately ends up being a great story, but at the time it's brutal. So yes. I totally get it. So you lost four scholarships or scholarships from four different universities. Tell us about how that might have happened.
So I went to the University of San Francisco out of high school, and my coach got fired halfway through the season. And a new coach came in, this legendary coach, but he only intended to finish the year. Then another coach came in after that, and he sat us all down and said, I'm not looking to get rid of, you know, any of you guys. I inherited this team and I want to stick with it. So that let us all kind of, we felt at ease. I go into the summer and I go back home and I get a call from that coach and said, it's about 2 weeks before school starts. And he says, Pierce, we're not going to be having you back for your sophomore season. And I'm just devastated because in that same week, I lost my father. So really rough time in my life. It's 2 weeks before school starts, so I don't really have options. If he would have told me in February or something, I could have had time to find another school. But by this time, scholarships were dried out. I didn't really have anything to do. So I went to junior college.
And you were what, like 19 at this point?
I was 19,
Gosh. So much of the weight of the world on 19-year-old shoulders.
Right. Yeah. And this disappointment and expectations dropped again. And I'm kind of like I'm at another rock bottom point in my life. Then get a scholarship to a couple things happened in between there where I get a scholarship to University of North Carolina, Wilmington, didn't have enough credits to transfer over, couldn't go there. Got a scholarship to University of New Orleans. The BP oil spill happened. If you remember where the tons and tons of oil was going to the Gulf.
Yep.
They lost their funding, so I couldn't go there. Then I end up going to the University of Texas A&M Kingsville, small school in South Texas. And we had a losing season. The coach takes me to the airport at the end of the season and says, on my trip for spring break, he says, Pierce, we're not going to be having you back for your senior season. Lost a scholarship there. And so I have, again, no options. I don't know what to do. I can't transfer to another NCAA school. The assistant coach of that school says, hey, Pierce, there's a school that I went to in North Dakota called Dickinson State. And North Dakota didn't, you know, growing up, born and raised in Southern California, North Dakota doesn't sound like a place I'm ever going to go on paper, but I didn't have any options. My ego was, I had no ego. It's like, I just want to finish my schooling. And got a scholarship there, and it ended up being the best experience of my life. That's where I found public speaking, became the first commencement speaker as a student in the school's history.
Amazing. And,
I loved it. And so I wouldn't have got there any other way. So it all worked out.
Yeah. Isn't that always the way though? Like where the things that you think you want so much end up being, you know, if you don't get it, it ends up being the best thing that ever happened to you, you know, but it's so hard to see when it's happening to you at that moment.
Yes.
You know, so in your speech, you talk about your dad walking out of games and, you know, if you didn't play well, how did that affect your relationship with him?
It affected it in so many layered ways that I'm still really unraveling, you know, even to this day, because I looked up to my father. You know, he was my hero and I looked up to him. He was, I very much wanted to please him and, you know, get his approval. And it seems like no matter what I did on the court, I couldn't really get it. And at that time, you know, I'm able to, cause I did a lot of introspective work to understand why I quote unquote failed at basketball. And all of it had to do with how I was in my own head. Mm-hmm. I had this paralyzing performance anxiety that I just couldn't get out of. And I tried to do I tried a lot of things, but it was all the wrong things. And I realized that later. But so I'd be so focused on him and performing for him that I was never focused on the game. And so that, you know, that's where I'd get a little distracted. But him walking out would make me, it'd take me out of the game. It'd make me, you know, focus on him. And he would kind of not talk to me for a few weeks because of it, because I played well and he'd teach lessons. And so I had to learn to cope with it, to not need him, that I don't need him to be there. And that's what really helped me kind of get through it.
So I want to just dig into that a little bit more, because a lot of the people that are in my community that follow me are dealing with narcissists, or people who that they, you know, they either have narcissistic traits or they're abusive in some way. And I'm not saying that your dad was abusive, but I want to just kind of, do you think that walking out on you was a way of trying to control you, trying to punish you, you know, anything like that?
Yeah, it was his way of trying to motivate me, and he was very much teach you a lesson. And so he thought that me, or him walking out, was going to motivate me more to that, like, so that like next time he's in there, I'm going to impress him and I'm going to put all this work in to have a better performance next time. And for me, it did the total opposite. And you know, some people, that works for some people. You know,
if it does work, though, it still makes you feel terrible inside. Yeah. I mean, you're not going to be motivated by the right things even still at that point, I would think.
Sure. Yeah. And I'm more talking about, yeah, it definitely hurts either way. I guess some people, it works as far as like achieving what he wanted to achieve as far as performance. That right. May motivate some people, but that didn't work on me. I was a sensitive kid. I'm a sensitive guy. So that was never going to be the approach.
So, but I liked what you said, that you learned how to not let it affect you. Can you talk more about that? Because I think that's like right in there is that spot that's where you first, I think, were learning to pivot. I mean, that's a type of pivot, really.
Yeah.
So can you talk about how did you get there? How did you get yourself to a point where you didn't think about it anymore, or it didn't bother you, or whatever you had to do to deal with that?
I think pivoting and all this stuff deals with a similar kind of, there's a common denominator in that it's all acceptance and expectations. So in the beginning, my expectations is I expected my father to be like every other father for all these other kids. My dad's supposed to stay no matter what I do. You know, he's supposed to just be at my game if I'm performing well or not. My dad is supposed to stay there. That's what all the other dads are doing, right? But I got to the point where I expected my dad to be my dad. And that's what helped me. Now I expect him to walk out, or I expect him to not show up. So once I start expecting what is, which is his behavior, that's when I was able to, you know, I came to an acceptance and I was free from that. So I had to come to a point where, because I mean, the last couple of years, maybe the last year or so, my senior year, I don't, maybe he went to one game or something like that. Senior year of high school, he didn't come to any games in college. So my freshman year. So I just expected him to not be there.
And how old were you when he died?
I was 19.
Oh, 19. Okay.
Yep.
So what lesson have you learned from basketball that applies throughout life?
Oh my gosh, it's countless. I think the biggest lesson I learned from my failures at basketball is that you have to, if you want to accomplish something that you really believe in, you have to surrender and devote your life to it. And it means being uncomfortable and sacrificing. So the reason that I didn't become everything that I could be, and that's not to say that I would have went to the NBA or something, but I didn't squeeze all the juice out of my basketball experience from a playing standpoint because I didn't put my all into it. Mm-hmm. So because I, you know, those moments where I got down or I lost confidence and my father walked out, instead of going out in the gym and shooting for 2 extra hours or practicing my ball handling to really build my confidence, which was the core part of the problem, I stayed in the room and maybe sulked, or I got down on myself and I didn't practice to get myself out of this hole, you know? So that's what it's that going the extra mile approach that I brought over to what I'm doing now. So if I'm speaking, I need to be working on my speech for X number of hours a day. I need to wake up at 5 a.m. and, you know, finish a draft or practice my vocal variety or something like that. So it's that extra time in and surrendering and devotion to it that I think I grabbed more than anything.
Coming up, more on Negotiate Your Best Life with Rebecca Zahn.
Situation after situation being let down and let down, and my expectations dropping and my ego dropping. So I had gotten used to things not working out, right? So that which can, like you said, lead to a victim mentality, but I had been pivoting pretty much all my life. So it kind of created, it started to condition me to, you know, different experiences than what I expected.
Imagine it's the year 2014. You're a successful young swimsuit model who jet sets to exotic locations. On the outside, everything seems fine, but coworkers start to notice the consistent smell of vodka on your breath. Your drinking and cocaine use has escalated over the past few years, culminating in a near-fatal car accident driving the streets of Miami. It didn't used to be this way. This is the story of Lyra, and she tells it on the powerful new podcast, Keep Coming Back, Real Stories of Sobriety and Recovery. Each week, host Mike S. interviews and unravels true stories of people who fell down and who've managed to get back up again. Subscribe and listen to Keep Coming Back, Real Stories of Sobriety and Recovery. A link will be provided in today's show notes.
Are you struggling with how to negotiate and win? Maybe you're dealing with a personality that's particularly challenging, like a narcissist or other high-conflict personality, and you're feeling powerless. Make sure to download my free Win My Negotiation cheat sheet at www.winmynegotiation.com.
Take a listen to our archive, where you can listen to more episodes that show you the path to how to negotiate your best life.
Oh, say those again. Say those again. Let go of
my need for approval, my addiction to being busy, my financial insecurity. How do I let go of my need for control? And how do I let go of these bottled up frustrations that I have with my coworkers?
And now we return to today's show.
So, but what I also hear you saying is that, you know, instead of having a pity party, like life isn't fair, and this is horrible, and you know, you could have very easily fallen into this victim mentality, and nobody would have blamed you for it, you know, with all of the things, the adversities that you had to overcome. But what I'm hearing you saying is that you said, no, I'm going to take responsibility for my own life, and I can choose to see myself as a victim, or I can choose to see myself as being a victor, being victorious instead of a victim.
So, right. 100%. I could have looked, and for a long time I did, look at everything the wrong way and grab the wrong lessons out of every situation. For example, that coach came in from San Francisco and said, Pierce, everybody, we're not looking to get rid of you. I could have just hung on to that little part. And even though he got rid of me and been focused on, you said you weren't going to do that. You know, you said this, you said that, you're supposed to, or I could focus on what the actual truth, which is I should have been a player, or I was in control of being the best player that I could be so that I could be irreplaceable, you know, so that he has no choice but to keep me. Right. And that wasn't the case. I was, as far as my game, I was disposable at that time. So that's I had to come to that acceptance that I didn't put it all out there, that I didn't work on my game in the way that I should have. And ultimately, I have to control what I can control. And I controlled that, you know, so I was responsible for it, as you said.
Yeah, which is amazing. I mean, and to learn how to pivot at such a young age. So how were you able to pivot into doing what you want to do?
I think it's extremely layered, and I think it's it situation after situation being let down and my expectations dropping and my ego dropping. So I had gotten used to things not working out, right? So that which can, like you said, lead to a victim mentality, but I had been pivoting pretty much all my life. So it started to condition me to, different experiences than what I expected. But on the one hand, me growing up and experiencing everybody around me say that I was going to be something great, like you're going to go to the NBA, right? Or my family saying that I was going to accomplish something great, that made me think that I was here for a reason. So I had this deep belief that I had purpose in my life. So that made me always try. I was curious and I sought out different things. What am I supposed to be? What am I supposed to be? So that was the guiding light for me in my dark moments.
So I'm curious, was there somebody else in your life that was helping you learn how to do this? Or was this just innate for you?
I would say there were many people in my life. My uncle is a huge mentor of mine. He was a guiding light for me and really, pepped me up. I always seem to have, fortunately, the right people at the right time to give me some source of inspiration. Whether it was a great coach that told me the right thing, a teacher that told me I was smart and I was, talented or something like that. My uncle, as I mentioned, maybe some music. I was, heavy into music, so I wanted to find some song that was uplifting, a YouTube video. So I always kind of looked for something to give me some light. So I think all of that helped.
What role would gratitude or appreciation play in all of this for you?
It's the only way that I was able to pivot gracefully and compassionate with my experience and be able to let it go. Gratitude and surrender, I think, are the two core themes that I had to be grateful for my basketball experience, because I learned so much from it and I met so many great people. And if my experience is only conditioned around, if basketball is only a success conditioned around making it, it's not a good way to live life, because sometimes things don't work out, whether you had the talent to make it or not. But if I look at all the things basketball did bring for me, got to travel, got to get an education, got to meet great people, life lessons, all this stuff I am grateful for. And it was changing that relationship with basketball from resentment to gratitude, which is what allowed me to pivot.
Yeah, I think that makes such a huge difference. And I read one time that when you're in a state of gratitude, you're actually in a state of receiving. And because you're saying I'm grateful for what I have, so now you're open to receiving. And so unless you're grateful, you actually can't get more of the good things into your life. And so rather than you sitting around going, well, I lost 4 scholarships and I didn't get the MBA and I didn't end up where I wanted to be or where I was supposed to be, and if you had just focused on all of that, I think that you would have just gotten more bad stuff in your life. I think the fact that you were able to focus, what you focus on is what you end up manifesting. And the fact that you were able to pivot that and go, I'm grateful for the experience. Yes, it didn't work out the way I wanted it to, but actually it worked out better. Yes. I think that makes a huge difference in people learning how to pivot. And actually, I've had to deal with toxic people in my life, which is, part of the reason why I do what I do now for helping people through negotiating with narcissists and high conflict personalities. And had I not been through my own experiences of hell dealing with them, I wouldn't have the compassion that I have. I wouldn't even be doing this now. So, I think that, it always happens for a reason, right? So how do you suggest people, start identifying what they need to pivot in their lives and how to do that?
I think it's spending considerable time with yourself, getting used to your own voice. And we going back to social pressure, like we were talking about, like you experienced with your family, right? And being a doctor or a lawyer, or we all have this social pressure in our lives, and it starts with our families. And as we grow out, it expands, and you go to school and your friends say you're supposed to be this, teachers say you're supposed to be that. And, you know, you have social media and you have all the, you know, people are posting, you know, their kids, and you think you're supposed to be married with children by a certain age. I mean, there's all these pressures hitting us at any given, you know, point. And so what you have to do, I think, is really try to separate yourself from that and start to do introspective work on how you feel about things. So I'm a strong proponent of writing things out, journaling things, even conversations, just some form of expression. I think when you express yourself in whatever way that you do, whether it is talking it out, writing it down, some people like to just dance in their room alone, you know, some type of expression will help you just tune into your own essence. So really implementing that as a practice for yourself consistently is how you start to build confidence in your own voice. Because if you're so focused on everyone else giving you the answers, then you never get to, you know, where you feel like you're supposed to be.
Yeah. And I think that those areas that are of difficulty for you are the areas where I feel like the universe is saying, okay, here's where you need to grow. Here's where you need to learn, you know.
Right.
I know for myself, sometimes I'm like, okay, I think I've learned it now enough. All right. We can move on.
Right. And the way that you grab it too, is you have to commit to your choice. So you can't be 1 foot in, 1 foot out, because that's the only way, if you know, if this is purpose, what's the voice in our head telling us? Is it purpose or chatter, right? You only know if it's purpose if you commit to it, if you give your all to it. So you can't be like, oh, I'm just going to test it out. You really just have to go for it.
Yeah, absolutely. So interestingly enough, speaking of you having a life of learning how to pivot, you've had to pivot again because of COVID-19.
Right.
You lost your day job, apparently. Yeah. So tell us about that.
You know, I've been working in cannabis for the last 3 years, and you know, great experience. I was a department marketing director, and it was a lot of fun. But this year, 2020 has been different for all of us, right? My TEDx talk came out in February, and I had been doing some speaking engagements before that, but this really kind of launched a shift in my life where certain opportunities that came in that I really, you know, never really saw coming before. And I was like, you know what? I love doing this. I want to figure out how to really make this part of what I do, my business, you know, helping people and things like that. And so right as I'm thinking about this and bringing clarity to my feelings, I get laid off. And instead of like holding that resentment, right, I was just like, this is really what I asked for. This is what I wanted. I want to start my own business. I want that freedom, and I want to help people. And so I had gratitude for the opportunity, and I'm building my business, and it's been a wonderful experience for me.
So tell us about your business.
Yeah. Empowered Storytellers is a life coaching and team building service. So work a lot with one-on-one empowerment training and also team building for companies. And so a lot of what I do with companies is, you know, a lot of people are asking, a lot of organizations are wondering how to kind of structure remote team building, you know, how they build their teams through, you know, the new world that we have now with Zoom and all that. Also doing talks around promoting racial equity as a Black man and having experience in two of the last three companies. I've been the only Black person in companies over 100 people. I have, you know, various talks and ideas around how to structure, you know, equity across people, across the, you know, the entire organization, right? And making sure that everyone has a voice. And so that's what my company does right now. We have some lot of great opportunities with companies, small and large, that we're working on right now. And so it's been, you know, a wonderful experience.
Amazing. So, I mean, it's like the best thing that ever happened, right?
Yes.
So what is your overall message to people?
My overall message is find meaning in madness. this is a crazy time for everyone right now, and it's all happening for a reason. And we find those reasons when we do that introspective work, right? All this civil unrest, you know, COVID happening, all this where we have to sit at home, it's making us really, it's making us pivot. And
I love that find meaning in madness. That's awesome.
That's what it's all about.
I've often said out of chaos comes clarity. It's like another way of saying that. So yes. This is a question that I ask all of my guests. If you were to choose a spirit animal for yourself, what spirit animal would you be?
Oh, that's a great question. Spirit animal. I would say I'm caught between two, but I'm going to say a horse.
Okay. So why?
I've been riding horses since I was 12 years old, and I just feel really I feel free when I'm on a horse, and I feel like I'm really in my element. Right. So a wild horse, right? I think that's what I really connect with horses. If I were to say something in the air, I would say maybe a hawk.
Oh, very cool. They're both really cool.
Yeah. What about you?
I love that question because it really you can tell a lot. I used to say tiger, but then I looked up what it meant if your spirit animal was a tiger. And when I read that, I was like, no, it's not me.
I'm not a tiger.
Yeah, no, it's not me. So I think I'm more like a lioness, you know, like very protective of my family, but also very purposeful in what I do. And, you know, I see things through, I take care of everyone. So yeah. I think it would be that. That's what I'm going with right now anyway.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to look this up. I'm going to look up a horse and a hawk and see if they fit. If they don't, next time I talk to you, maybe I'll have a different animal.
There you go. Yeah. You know how you're not locked in.
Yeah, so exactly.
Where can people find out more about you?
I'm Pierce J. Brooks pretty much everywhere you go. So on Instagram at Pierce J. Brooks. My website is piercejbrooks.com. Also have a Medium blog where I publish blogs and articles. So definitely reach out and would love to chat with you.
All right. Thank you so much, Pierce. This was really great and a lot of fun.
Thank you, Rebecca.
Thanks for stopping by and listening to this episode of Negotiate Your Best Life. I'm Rebecca Zung. Check back next Monday for more inspirational pearls of wisdom. And if you enjoyed today's podcast, I'd love if you would give it a 5-star rating and tell me what you liked in a review on iTunes. Also, be sure to grab your winning negotiation cheat sheet at winmynegotiation.com. And remember, today is a perfect day to start negotiating your best life.